Welcome to DJ Grandpa's Crib, the crowdfunding podcast. Each week I interview real people with honest dreams. Today is Monday, January 27th, 2014. Wow is all I can say. Our first episode of season two. During this week in history, in 1888, a group of 33 geographers, explorers, teachers, lawyers, cartographers, military officers, and financiers came together and formed the National Geographic Society. Alive and kicking well over 100 years. Congrats.
General Doodle, the time has come. The farmyard is in open rebellion, and the animals are rising up to take control. New alliances have just been made, and four different factions are fighting each other while the farm hangs in the balance.
Man, how you doing?
We're good. I'm Mike Cameron here, the game designer, and this is Mike Conus with me. He's the illustrator and designer.
How you doing?
Okay, man, I'm going to tell you guys straight up. I like any game that's like Bedlam, any game that's like a mad, mad world. And I believe Livestock Uprising, A Call to Farms, is such a game. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think you're half right. I think the end game is certainly Bedlam. The beginning's a little more linear, and then it breaks into Bedlam pretty quickly.
So it starts off like sane, and then insanity.
Yes.
Yeah, we like to walk both sides of that coin.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you start off with the boring sheep eating the grass at the start, and then eventually you've got like horses and oxen butting heads over the farm.
I think I can understand that because you said something about apples and carrots and stuff, and I was like, what are these apples and carrots doing in the game? How could that be any fun? But then you talked about tough cows and pigs, and I thought I saw a rooster, you know, black ops and stuff. So I was like, okay. So why don't you guys explain this?
So we've got four factions of animals. We've got cows, chickens, goats, and pigs, and they're all battling on the farm for control. Now, each separate faction has its own kind of special troops, right? So the cows have their big, bulky, defending special forces. And, like, the chickens are really quick, so they move around the board really quickly. The goats are attacking, so they're really aggressive. And the pigs, you know, the pigs just kind of, they like to lay back and roll in the mud and pull up the resources. So they're kind of like the eaters, right? And so the idea is all of these factions are running around the farm trying to get those things that you talked about, you know, like the grass and the carrots and the apples. And they're trying to get all those really quickly so they can get other animals into their army to take over the farm.
Right.
So the 10,000-foot view, it's like a royal rumble for the farm.
Wow, the 10,000-foot view. Where'd you guys steal that from? That's pretty good. Now, are the chickens the top dog? Because in the video, they seem to be the narrators and the whatevers, and, you know, they had the game plans and all of that. So are they the top dog?
Honestly, the reason the chicken is in the initial video is because we really like the name General Doodle. That's the only reason the chicken is. In the second video, the gameplay video, it's all cow.
Okay, so, it's all, stop yep. playing around, it's
that's
all
right.
me.
That's right. We kind of like to walk that line between absurd humor like General Doodle and then that kind of militaristic toughness and like the ornery oxen.
Next, our three-star general, General Taurus, moves in to attack a nearby goat battalion. General Taurus is trying to gain control of the carrot occupied by those filthy goats.
Do you guys have social problems or anything like that, you know, that would tend to you creating a game like this?
None I'm going to admit right now. Maybe a
disrespect for authority.
Yeah, and a gross affection for alcohol, probably.
Okay, I can get that. Okay, what if I play the same boat tactic and I start to tell you how, you know, I have social problems and I'm quite inept myself, so.
You could open us up that way, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. I'm socially inept, you know, shy type of guy. But we're talking via Skype, and you said it's very dark. See, That tells you mysterious, kind of hiding for something. What is DJ Grandpa hiding? You know, he has social problems, stuff like that. So maybe now you guys could admit a little more. I told you some of my problems. What about some of yours?
It's been a really sort of an interesting experience in growth for both of us, bringing this to life and really give it a face, and now we have to sort of be the face promoting it, you know, and we have to get in front of people and you know, do interviews and talk about it and really take it to the public, which has been a really, really interesting for both of us.
Yeah, I hate sales. I had a job once where I did outside sales for an industry that I just didn't buy. I didn't respect it. I didn't want to do it. I would book outside sales calls, and I would go to the local Borders and read art books. Right. And at that point, I knew I should get out of it, and either quit or be fired was in my future. So, and I thought it would be easier with a product like this that I really believed in, but it's still really hard to just go out and sell something. And I don't love it. That's putting it mildly. I'd rather sit back and let people enjoy it without me having to tell them to enjoy it.
Yeah. You know, when it comes down to it, we're just guys that we love board games. This is our passion. This is probably the most exciting thing that either of us really right. has done. You know, it's sort of the pinnacle of our sort of careers and skill sets, and we're really proud of it. And that kind of gets us over that hump a lot of the times.
I think if you guys are drinking right now, I would get more out of you probably, I think.
Who says we're not? Gotta lube up a little bit for
Well, maybe that's why the lights are dark on my side also.
So. We're all on the same hungry boat then.
Okay, well, how long has this game been in development, Livestock Uprising?
6 months.
Yeah, 6 months. That's six, quick.
So it's been a really interesting process, and Livestock was sort of, we say 6 or 7 months, but really it's probably more like a year of sort of exploring what we wanted to do before we really landed on this.
And how long have you, the both of you, been working together? I mean, because you guys feel pretty tight as a team right now.
About a year and a half.
That's not long either.
We were playing the Game of Thrones card game one night.
We
call it Nerd Cards. And Cameron and I were playing, and we couldn't get anybody else to come and play with us because it's so damn nerdy and right. so confusing and convoluted. So we said, wow, we should come up with another game that's a drinking game that's fun that we can get the wives involved in and bring the other people in that aren't quite as mathematically inclined as we are.
Right.
And I was leaving that day. I sat in his foyer, and in 20 minutes, we had the basic constructs of that game. The next day, I sent him an illustration that I had done months before and said, wow, we could use something like this as one of the characters in this game. 2 hours later, he came back with a fully graphically designed card with that image in card, and we were rolling. And I mean, it's been nonstop pretty much since that evening.
Right.
And to come full circle, we've known each other for what, like 5 years?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yep.
And we're neighbors, actually.
We were just working independently before, right. You know, I was painting and he was doing computer work, graphic design work.
All right. Now, if you're saying you've been neighbors for 5 years, you know, you've stared each other or leered at each other when you walked out of the door, you know, right. going back and forth to work or families or cookouts, you know, you didn't share a hot dog or a bun across the fence or something like that. So you've gotten to know each other a little bit in 5 years, but that's still different than working together. But you guys sound like you have the symbiosis thing going pretty well, man. Your voices are calm. I don't hear any backstabbing. You know, everybody's taking their turn. So, I mean, this is a good vibe, man, for you two, man. I hope you guys keep it up, and you guys are doing well on Kickstarter, but they're not turning down any money because I never like to suppress the vote. So go to Kickstarter.com and check out Livestock Uprising. Now another question. What's the age range for this game?
14 and up.
How many players?
The play is actually quite seamless from anywhere from 2 to 4 players, and we're intending on doing an expansion for 6 players once this one is complete.
Right, I'm loving this game. As soon as I saw Livestock Uprising, I hadn't even pushed a video. I was sitting next to my 14-year-old son, and I was like, dude, this is my type of game. So then I pushed a video, and, you know, sometimes the videos don't live up to, you know, you making that type of statement. But this one did.
We're really glad you said that. We thought long and hard about the video. It's my voice, but after a lot of audio distortion.
You just reminded me. I want to bestow upon you guys that you are the first recipient of the DJ Grandpa Crazy Video of the Year Award. You're the
Fantastic.
First nominee, right. first recipient this year in 2014. So I wanted to let you know that.
That is our first award ever.
You guys deserve it because that video was cool. Even with the regalia, it had like the
I don't know what rank that was, but with the chicken claw and stuff like that, that was incredible, man.
Great, genius.
So I was like, these guys deserve a DJ Grandpa Video Award for, you know, one of the best gaming videos I've seen this year.
Well, first I want to thank the studio. My parents.
Wait, I got to interrupt.
Hey, we're about to go to commercial break, so you might want to.
Yeah, right. You're playing me off already. My first award.
For anyone out there, go to Kickstarter.com and check out Livestock. That's one word, Uprising. A call to farms by Dog Might. That's a cool name too, by Dog Might.
My name is Al Vink. I'm an electronics hobbyist and the creator of Pixel. Pixel is an LED display for pixel art. Pixel art is this low-resolution retro art form, really a throwback to the video game art of the 80s and early 90s.
First, I'd like to welcome you to the show, DJ Grandpa's Crib. This is our first episode of 2014, so I'm glad to have you on it, man.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're not new to Kickstarter. It looks like you've been doing this for a little bit. So why don't you tell me about pixel art?
I am an electronics hobbyist guy. So I like to play around with electronics in my spare time. And I had this idea about a year and a half ago. Did the initial Kickstarter back in March of 2013. We ended up getting funded. And now I'm just back with version 2. And we were able to implement a lot of the features from the feedback we got from the first version.
What is pixel art actually? What does it do?
So it's an array of 1,024 LEDs. And the vision or the idea behind it is to take this pixel art genre, which is this kind of very low resolution form of art, very much like early video game art, and take that and let artists display that on this new LED medium. And so it's basically just a display of LEDs where you can show pixel art.
Right, and a lot of them move.
So if you're familiar with animated GIFs, that's the file format that it uses. So as the artist, you just need to produce your art in animated GIF format and then use the software to transfer it to the display.
The LEDs make it like super vibrant and stuff. So I would like a Galaga one, actually. I saw you had a Pac-Man.
Yeah, you make a good point on the LEDs. It's kind of hard to see on the video, but they really pop in real life.
They really pop. Yeah, okay.
So they're actually the same LEDs that you'll see on a scoreboard.
Right.
They're made to be very bright, so they're very, as you said, vibrant.
No, I didn't say. I think eye popping.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And it's app driven. You know, I guess you can load stuff or control it from your phone.
So right now we're supporting Android. So we've got a few Android apps out there. And you can also run it over PC, over Windows, and as well as a Mac. And then most recently, Raspberry Pi. Are you familiar with the Raspberry Pi?
No, but everyone seems to be getting into this Raspberry Pi. I have a couple interviews coming up that all it is Raspberry Pi. So I guess that's something new I'm going to be learning this year.
It's pretty cool. So it's basically, think of it as a $35 computer.
Right.
About the size of a credit card. So.
Oh, okay.
That's why everyone's so crazy about it, because it's such low cost. But, you know, it's basically a full-blown computer. You can do some pretty cool stuff with it.
I thank you very much for the information, man. You're a very nice guy, man. And I really like the touch of those twin girls in the video, man. I'm a sucker for kids in crowdfunding videos all the time. Are those your children?
Those are my two girls, 6 and 9, Layla and Mina.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
And they didn't even have to talk. That's what made it so cool for me.
Yeah, they were good sports.
Well, all they did was nod their heads and put on, you know, they were like Men in Black, except they were girls. But
yeah.
Is there anything else I should know about pixel art?
I guess the other point to make would be that we spend a lot of time working with artists to do the art for it.
Right.
So I'm more of an engineer, so I'm not an artist myself. So we got about 10 artists signed up, and between those 10 artists, they did about 150 pieces of work, which it comes included with the product.
Kickstarter a lot of times is throwback, and so you have the whole pixel art thing, and that's kind of like the 80s.
Right.
But that's what made it so cool, you know, because I'll tell you the truth. I'm sure you've had a lot of people that have said that, you know, that's my idea. I thought of something just like that. Because, you know, when I first saw your invention, I was like, I thought of that, you know. But I thought like high resolution or like the Windows screensavers from like the 90s, you know, with okay. the stuff pinging around. But yours being pixelated, I never thought of that. And it gives it a whole new, I would never call pixel art, but the way yours is set up with the LEDs and the way it moves and the way it has like the app for weather and all sorts of little gadgety things, it does look like art. And the animation, it's really cool, man. That's why I reached out to you so fast, man. I'm really glad that you accepted my invitation, man, and gave me a chance to talk to you, man, because I was just so happy, man. I mean, I was like, your invention is so much fun.
It's definitely the retro vibe that we were going for. And as you mentioned, it really is art. Pixel art is its own kind of little thing there. That's actually one of the goals of the project, is to make that more of a well-known art form, because it is kind of an underground thing.
Yeah.
And to kind of spread the word on that and give those artists some visibility and make it available to a larger audience.
Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking, okay, I said Gallagher. What else do we need? Throwback. We need a vinyl LP or a cassette spinning or something like that. Or a record
player. How about 8-track?
Oh, even better. 8-track. Right, but you can't see the spools in the 8-track so much, though.
Yeah.
You can see kind of like the spools moving on a cassette or something like that, you know. Or one of those reel-to-reel machines or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Something like that. Yeah.
Now, I'm always looking for new art, so if there's any pixel artists out there listening, definitely contact me. And if you've got some good stuff, we can work out a trade.
Okay, what's your company so they could contact you by?
It's called Open Gadgets. The easiest way is just go directly to the website, which is ledpixelart.com, okay. All one word.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, man. Tell your daughters that they were super cool in their cameos in the video. And for anybody out there, if you're listening to this program, he is on Kickstarter. So go check him out on Kickstarter. It's Pixel Art, P-I-X-E-L, one word, art. And if you can't find him there, always go to djgrandpa.com, where we keep the freshest stuff always, man. This project is super cool. And I know you've heard me say that before, but every time I've said it, I've never lied. So, so I'm trying to keep my word in 2014. Al, thank you very much for coming on the show, man. And I wish you the best with your project.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Gregory Wilson. I'm a storyteller. And with Icarus, I wanted to tell a story different from anything I'd ever experienced before as a reader. Icarus is set in the heart of a massive dormant volcano called Vol by the people who live there.
And the two. I'm not happy, though. Where's Janine, man? That's a bait and switch, man. That's a bait and switch.
I know, right?
What's going on here?
You're certainly the better looking of the two of us.
I'm not trying to get into looks. I'm just trying to say that, because that would be, my wife would say that's improper if I comment on Janine's looks. So, you know, she would say that's an improper workplace conversation. You know, she used to hit me on that. So I got sensitivity training studies at NPR and stuff. You know, I can't get into that.
Well, we have to go through it in the Marine Corps, too.
I'm shocked that they let you on the mic. Give you a chance to do a Kickstarter of your own. Okay, Ron. And, you know, at Silence of the Library, they seem a little touchy about who they let represent these Kickstarters publicly. Now, I know you were behind the scenes. Now, mind you.
Yeah, they've been me under wraps.
Right.
I think I just stutter more than anybody else. And I'm not as attractive as the other people, so they don't want to let me out in public too much.
But you have this whole Icarus project, and incredible name. You know, Icarus, always a winner.
It's a novel that Greg Wilson wrote, and while it is certainly about a boy who flies, he is not the Icarus of Greek mythology. Greg has created a world called Vol, peopled by really amazing, amazing creatures and beings. And Icarus is one of those. He's tall and he's thin and he's fair and he's, you know, he flies, and he teams up with this flame petal prospector who is maybe about as opposite from him physically as someone can be. He's this very short, red skinned, very tough and gruff kind of character. And the two of them team up and they have to save the world basically from this race called the Magisters, who have enslaved the entire world.
But what is a flame petal? I've never even heard of that.
So a flame petal is something else that Greg has created for this novel, and the flame petal is a thing that grows in the volcanic flows that basically powers all of the things that the Magisters use their magic to power, right? So it kind of powers their world.
The graphics are incredible. I believe I read in your information that this is your first, you know, foray into doing a graphic novel. Is that correct?
I wanted our first launch into the graphic novel field to be something that was spectacular and something that made me pause and want to see more. And what really did this for me was, you know, we had Matt Slay do the illustration artist for Time Travel Tales. And you remember that anthology, I'm sure.
And I know that you guys, once you get your clutches into people, you really don't let them go, so.
Oh, no. You know? We get talented people on board, and we want to keep them on board, so we work very hard.
No, you were devious. Devious.
Well, we are devious too, but I want to put a positive spin on this. Come on.
My fault. That's right. I'm forgetting my place. Go ahead.
My wife and I ran into Matt at a science fiction and fantasy convention, and we were looking for an artist for Time Travel Tales, and Matt walked by our table, and he looked at some stuff that we had going on at the table, and he was like, oh, I really like this. And Janine said, oh, that's great. What do you do? And he's like, oh, I'm an artist. And we went and saw his art. And Janine immediately said, you know what? I would love to have this guy do Time Travel Tales. And we talked to Matt about it. And we gave him a copy of the book of the stories in Time Travel Tales at that convention. And he read it. And right there was like, oh, I have to do this book. I got to do the book. So we did Time Travel Tales. One of the illustrations he did for Time Travel Tales that ultimately didn't make it in because the story got pulled to be used for this Icarus novel was the prologue for Icarus. And he did this artwork for it that was just amazing. It was just incredibly beautiful. And as soon as I saw that artwork, I called up Gregory Wilson, who wrote the novel. And I said, Greg, take a look at this artwork. We got to do a graphic novel. And he was already on board. He had already come to the same conclusion, and it just snowballed from there. So we've been working on this actually since lining everything up since the Time Travel Tales Kickstarter ended. We obviously want it to do as well as possible because we've got some incredible stretch goal authors that we'd love to get into the story. And the way that's going to work is, well, of course, we'll have the main graphic novel. And then if we reach these stretch goals, we're going to take each of these authors, and they're going to write a very short story for us. And then we've teamed them up with artists who are going to illustrate those stories, and we will put them in the book with the Icarus story. So those short stories will all be stories in the Icarus universe, and they'll kind of be follow-on stories to the main graphic novel.
Well, I don't know if I'm seeing something different, but I thought that maybe I'm seeing something different with this Kickstarter. Usually you guys are like, you know, $5, all the books you can stand, $5, you know. But it seems on this Kickstarter that you've also gone into merch, you know, what they call merchandise. You got like gaming minis. Am I correct?
This is something unlike anything that we've ever done before in that we are not just going for the print book, but we've got this amazing idea for this video game that we want to produce and that we're going to produce. And if we reach the appropriate level where we can pay the game designers to make it happen, then everybody gets this module of the game, the first few chapters of the game that they can play, and it's not going to cost them anything extra. Right. And then we've got authors like Ed Greenwood, who was
the guy. Hold up. You always have to name drop when it comes to What should we call those people that they're like your boots on the ground? They're like your infantry. They're like your special ops riding tactical team or something. Who are these extra people, man, that are gonna?
That's right.
That you got riding.
The project's exciting already, but you know what we like to do is we like to drive up that excitement all the way through, right?
Right.
And if we can get to a stretch goal every, you know, few days, that's going to get people coming in and going, wow, look what just got added. Wow, look what just got added. But, you know, that's just exciting for us and it's gravy for us and it makes the project better, which ultimately is what we're all about. We want to produce a good product. We want to produce something that people are going to love and we want to give it to them at a reasonable price, you know?
Now, I've heard that you're a very creative guy. You're an ideas guy. You keep coming up with Plan A, Plan B, Plan C. This cat is a genius. Da 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 da. I've heard that. Not with you telling it, but others telling me it in your camp. So I want to know from you about the author. Do you co-sign for him? Like, I'm taking your word, your crowdfunding word of honor. This author is very good in this book. I will not be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed in this book.
It's exciting. Absolutely. Riveting.
The book is exciting. The story is amazing. And not only is the author amazing, Matt Slay's artwork for it is just astounding.
Oh, I saw some of that. I was in shock. I was like, oh my God, I wish I could get this guy for a DJ Grandpa shirt knockoff or something.
The art is the kind of stuff, and I love graphic novels, and I love the kind of art you find in graphic novels. And this, to me, is beyond anything that I've seen in a graphic novel before. So I am really, really pleased with the stuff that Matt Slay has been turning out.
For anyone out there, go to Kickstarter and check out Icarus. That's I-C-A-R-U-S. It's a graphic novel by Silence in the Library. If you can't find it there, go to djgrandpa.com where we have many links for Silence in the Library, including this one. After this interview, Ron, I don't think that they're going to really let me talk to you again, not alone, not unsupervised. So I just want to say thank you right now. And I'm sorry, but I must publish what we said.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
From a moment frozen in time, when you and I thought we would be oh so very happy, and we almost were.
Hello.
Oh, how's it going, Julie?
Hey, thank you so much for calling and wanting to talk to us. Me, I'm the only one.
You said us, though. Where are the rest?
They're both at home.
You could hold it down for everybody. I saw you in the video and everything, so I guess you are the lead, the main talker.
I'm the mouthy one.
Right. They probably talk with their instruments more so.
Yes, they do.
Why don't you tell me about yourself, you know, about the Michigan Vandals. I mean, you guys seem like a murderous high school athletics team. So I was totally interested in your group.
We do like to roll like a big old football team. It's just three of us. It's me and Colin and Matt. We've been together about 6 years. Colin joined us just a little while ago.
Right.
I used to have a record deal, and I was a rapper for a while called Icebox. And
Icebox.
And then I had a band called Venus Envy, and it was a rap metal project, right. And that was just a blast. Matt, he was in a band called Page Six. They were signed. Colin, he's kind of a savant. He just jumped in with us and learned all of our songs right away.
Oh, yeah, we live in the shadow of a nuclear reactor where all of the children seem to run a little faster. Yeah, we live in the shadow of a nuclear reactor. We have to get out of here. We have to.
And you guys are like 3 or 4 albums, EPs deep, so it's not like you've just begun or anything.
Music is a unifier, you know, it's right. What brings people together. I remember walking into a club in L.A. one time, and everybody jumping up and down and singing it. It was an old Public Enemy song, you know?
Right.
Everybody's jumping up and down singing it. And it didn't have any gender or racial or religious connotations. It was just everybody together knew the words because they loved the song because it hit them somewhere intrinsically. And, you know, that's the goal. That's the key, to write things that make people feel not so alone in the world.
I heard one of the live versions of one of your songs, and it was really cool, too. You guys were just, I mean, you were like Alan Jackson in country music, as he would say, you guys were the real deal.
Thank you. I like Alan Jackson. I like old country, like Chris LeDoux and Willie Nelson, you know, the Waylon Jennings. What are they called?
The Highwaymen.
Yeah, I love those guys.
In the hip hop, they would call them the Get High Boys, you know, like Method Man and never mind.
Oh, M-E-T-H-O-D, man. Oh, I love Method Man. Little known fact about me, I can rap the entire N.W.A. Straight Outta Compton and the entire 36 Chambers album front to back, no stopping. I love those two albums.
Those of you who don't know, I am on Indiegogo right now, and DJ Grandpa, to people on Indiegogo who don't know, I am the world's biggest music fan, bar none.
Amen.
And to make a long story short, because the story is never about me, Julie, it is always about you.
And you know, it's about all of us together, isn't it? Like, we've never done this before, and it's really, really weird for us to ask for help.
Right.
You know, we do really try to make our own way. We don't like to ask for much, but we like to give what we have. And,
right.
You know, our first album, we donated 100% of the sales to Habitat for Humanity because we felt that was the right thing to do. We had some friends that worked for the organization.
Yeah, Jimmy's
the second
house.
Album. Yeah, well, they had a build here in Benton Harbor, and Jimmy Carter had been here. And, you know, it's an organization that's just, you know, so many people in need. They really do great things. And then, like, St. Jude Children's Hospital is the next one we donated our album sales to because, you know, I had a little cousin who went through her second round of neuroblastoma and she survived. And,
yes.
You know, I don't want to shatter anybody's dreams, so this is just my personal thing. But the whole rock star myth thing, I think people get really wrapped up in what music can do for them. You know, is it going to take them out of their sadness and make them popular or make them rich or make them
right.
Something that they've always dreamed they wanted to be? And that's the exact wrong reason to be in music.
But in your video, you talked about how back in the day, there were patrons for musicians and things like that.
Yeah.
And that was super cool how you brought up that history. But then you also said that you have a rare opportunity about, what is this, Grammys, Oscars? What is this? You're all over the place.
We have a lot of friends. We've been through different record deals and different bands. And we always stay tight with almost all the bands that we've ever played with or worked with. We're all pretty much still friends. We support each other.
Right.
So these guys are guys that they've gone on to do big, bold things. They've won 8 Emmys, an Oscar for a movie they scored last year that was a huge movie. I just don't want to say who it is because I don't want to pimp them out. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And then like 4 Grammys. And they have a song on the Hunger Games soundtrack. Like, these guys really are doing well. And so when we were talking, I was like, yeah, I wish we'd do our album with you. They're like, let's do it. We have time at the end of February, March. Let's do it. And so we really just need to cover the studio time. And we're not asking for anything outrageous. You know, I see some of these campaigns and people want like $15,000, $20,000 to make an album. No, we just want to cover $5,000 worth of studio time in the mastering. We have a lot of it saved up on our own. We're just
right.
Asking for what the balance would be.
Right.
And in this day, in this era of pirating music and getting free music, I don't know if people understand the value of buying an album anymore. It's your gut, it's your heart, it's your soul.
It's
you know,
hard.
It's all the road trips and the gas money and the blown tubes and your amp and the busted strings and the, you know, Band-Aids on your fingers after you shredded a little too hard that night, you know.
Right.
You know, yeah, there used to be patrons. There were people that paid artists rent so that they could create. And we're not asking for anything that crazy. We just want to get in there. And we've always recorded with great friends in their wonderful studios. But this is like going to be, Rihanna just recorded there. And Dave Grohl, and these guys worked there with Smashing Pumpkins. It's going to sound really good. And we've never had that opportunity to just sound that good. You know, we just want it. Okay. It's that simple.
Okay, I have to admit, you've sold me on the album. Your enthusiasm alone has sold me to.
Sorry.
I tried to outpace you at the beginning, but I can't keep up with you. So, dude, I'm thinking that you guys must have something there. And if you're selling it that hard, I'm thinking you guys are true believers. My last question, how are they treating you on Indiegogo? Because I don't know a lot about them. So I'm trying to find out a little bit. So how's the community treating you?
Crowdfunding, you go in with this, maybe it's just me, maybe I go in with an ideal heart on everything, I don't know.
But I think so.
You go in, you're right. But I go in, we went in idealistically, and so it's been, I think so far so good. You know what? We're going to do it. We're an eighth of the way there. Oh, an eighth of the way there.
Now, for anyone out there, these guys, no, I don't know the other guys yet. I only know Julie, and she's incredible, and I love her enthusiasm. And so if the other guys were here, I think they would want me to say, check out Michigan City Vandals on Indiegogo.
Yeah.
Michigan City Vandals. And if you can't find them there, always go to DJGrandpa.com, where we'll have links for Julie and her threesome as they rock on.
Meow.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize we could start a revolution.
Remember, we are the crowdfunding channel, and we cover the globe.
Welcome to Spurs, a tale in the old West. It was a time of outlaws and lawlessness.
Well, you know, Sean Brown,
Desperado,
Mr. B Games. He's back on Kickstarter, and it's always a pleasure to talk to this guy, even though we've only done it twice. But I don't know what else to say. Welcome to the crib, dude.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
I'm shocked to be back in 2014, but yet here I am. We are here again. Now, my number one rule, I'm going to have to hit you hard and hit you low. Is this game any fun?
I wouldn't have signed it if it wasn't fun. That's the biggest thing I'm doing on my own this time around is I'm making sure everything I sign or touch or work with that I personally enjoy it first and foremost as a gamer. And I'll figure out the details and I'll make it work or I'll make it fit the mold to sell it later.
Right.
That might not necessarily be the best recipe for financial success, but it's the best recipe for happiness. And that's why I'm doing it.
All right, because you and I are way cool, man. But if you try and pull that on me, and the game's not fun, man. I don't know how I'm gonna react, man. That's an untested variable.
I think you're gonna love this one. I mean, it's a lot lighter than Alien Uprising.
Right.
Less rules and a lot easier to learn. Turns are real quick though. That is the one thing they both have in common. So I like to keep them fast paced, keep everyone's interest.
Okay.
It's got one of the coolest mechanics I've seen in a game. While there is a little bit of dice rolling in the game, the majority of your skill checks are going to be out of what we call a bullet bag. And the bullet bag is really cool because the way the game works is your character has special skills. So if you're a hunter, maybe then you're really good with using a rifle, not as good with a pistol.
Right.
What you do is you put these bullets inside your bullet bag. Some of them are rifle bullets, some of them are pistol bullets, and some of them are just misses, bullets that just signify a miss. And then every time you get into a combat situation, be it a duel in a city,
right,
or hunting an animal, or going after a wanted man, or trying to help a stagecoach or something, you do a skill check with your bullet bag, and you reach into this bag without looking, stir it up with your hands, and you pull out three of them, and you're looking for a certain number of hits. So let's say you're out hunting a rabbit. Rabbits are pretty easy to catch when you got a shotgun, so you're only looking for one hit. It's another way to mitigate luck. It's not like, roll these two dice and get a four to hit. Now it feels a little more thematic.
Right.
Throughout the game, you can customize this bag, add things to it, take things away. Every time you get hurt, you get shot by somebody, you have to put a red bullet in, and that signifies a wound. You draw one of those, that's just like a miss. And it's just kind of cool. It gives you all these little challenges and things, and it's just a neat way to resolve.
Right.
And my most favorite part of this bullet bag, let's say you and I get into a duel, And this, to me, was the selling point. I saw this, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is it.
The drawdown.
Everybody puts one hand on the table, one hand on the bag, and you do a 1, 2, 3 draw. And then it's as quick as you can. You dive in your bag. You pull out one bullet at a time, set it on the table, and you go back in until you get 2 hits. And the cool thing is you call out your weapon before you start. So if I know I'm better with a shotgun than you are with a pistol, I'm going to say I'm looking for shotgun.
I want a revolver.
So you'd be looking for gray bullets when you're pulling them out, and I'm looking for brown bullets.
Okay.
Because, you know, my last name's Brown, right? Why wouldn't I be expert with a rifle, right?
Okay, I got that.
You know, so we're sitting there grabbing those, and the first guy to get 2 of the bullets, you know, that match the color he was looking for, you slap the table. And that's the shot of the gunshot. That means you pull that enough, boom, you got the draw, and you're good to go. It's a hoot. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you get 3 or 4 guys around at a table, and people are doing, and everybody's laughing and having a good time, and it's just, you know what I mean? It's just light enough break.
No, I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean. I'm thinking I'm in a saloon, and I got a, you know, a bottle of whiskey next to me and some glasses, right? Is there a cheating factor in this game? Because you, I mean, I'm thinking your name is Brown, and I'm thinking you're the creator of the game. I'm thinking you have an unfair advantage on me somehow. So how do I get the drop on you? How do I cheat?
So there's no way to actually cheat, per se. But there are ways you can mitigate your luck. So name of the game, Spurs. So every time you do a really cool feat or solve a mission or something, you can get little spurs tokens.
Okay.
And you can use those spurs to cash them in at any time to kind of help your luck out, maybe give you an extra draw, you know, maybe make your horse move a little faster than you needed to, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah,
there you go. Now, in a duel, though, here's the deal. In a duel, it just comes down to who can pull them bullets out, put them on the table quick enough, get that draw, and slap that table fastest. Now, I will tell you, we did play this at the Board Game Geek Con show in November. And we played with a whole cast of characters, a bunch of different guys. And one of the things that, the primary designer on the game, Ole Steinus, he was very conscious to put in the game that, you know, if you're playing with some of your friends that maybe you got a kid in the bunch and he's a way faster than everybody, or maybe you have an adult that has some nerve damage or something like that, you know. Sometimes trying to make a game where it relies on who pulls something out the fastest, maybe that's not necessarily the fairest.
Oh, yeah. I am DJ Grandpa, so I'm not as spry as I used to be. Okay, I understand. I understand.
Well, like, you know, like I've got a big hand, right? So maybe my hand gets stuck in the bag all the time. So
let's hope not. Because I see you pulling out 2 and 3 bullets that way. That's not fair.
Exactly. So, you know, he put in a section in the rules that basically says, hey, you just draw them one at a time, right? It doesn't matter how fast you get it to the table. You draw one out and you both look, and then everybody goes back and they draw the second one. And, you know, if one guy pulled, you know, if he's got 2 matching after 2 draws and the other guy doesn't, he gets to slap the table and he wins.
Okay.
And if you both pull at the same time, you know, they got like a little tiebreaker in there for initiative kind of a thing. So then that way you don't have to rely on physical speed. But I'll tell you what, it's a blast to play either way. And of course, I love to play with some good folks around the table where you can fumble and bumble and people dropping their bags and kicking things over on the table.
You actually had bags, though, this time.
Yeah. Actually, little drawstring bags. And
okay.
So that way you can't see what you're getting. And you got to take them one at a time, and you got to put them down on the table. So, you know, sometimes people are fumbling and they fall off the table. That doesn't count. You know, it's got to be a plain sight. We do have a really cool rule that we made at BGGCon, actually. The premature shot, right? So we have a guy, and he's pulling, he gets his 3rd bullet, and he's convinced, right? He sees 2 grays, and he just smacks the table. Bam, right? And he's like, got you! And somebody says, you were using your rifle, man. You weren't using your pistol.
That would happen to me, man. I got shaky hands. I'm older now. I got shaky hands.
Exactly! So, you know, so we saw, that's like, you know, gun got caught in the holster, right? You tried to shoot it. Man, you shot yourself in the leg. And that's how we resolved that, is we just said, you got to take a red bullet, throw it in your bag, and that duel's over.
I'm thinking I'm calling that either the Barney Fife or the Shaky Six Shooter.
There you go. I like the Fife Shaky Six Shooter.
Yeah, the Shaky Six Shooter. That's what I'm thinking. All right, now, another game. Okay, now I'm starting to understand your game a little bit. All right, so now that you've acknowledged me and all of that, I'm thinking that I really love the slapping the hand on the table, because one time, you know, I rarely drink. Like, maybe I'll drink once every 10 years or something. You know, it averages out to that. Seven years or something like that. But one time I was at, you know, NPR and my colleagues, you know, they finally made me go out to a bar. And, you know, me being a Trekkie and all. And I was channeling Worf at the time. And I was slapping my hand on the table. And I was like, barkeep, bring me another blood wine. You know, so I was just, I mean, it was the most fun thing in the world to just slap your hand on the table like that and yell out to somebody. So
I'm telling you, I mean, this one, like I said, you know, when I sit down and I play Alien Uprising,
yeah,
there's tension and stress and we're all working together, right? And it's us against them and time, and it's real serious, and you just get involved and you're in there for a little bit. When I'm playing Spurs, we're all having a good time. You know, it's not one of those games where somebody comes and steals something or the lead from you. You don't get frustrated, you know, because it's just got that light kind of feel to it. But it's still got some good depth and some good strategy. And it also has a really good simulation. It feels like I'm doing those classic odd jobs in the Old West. I mean, we've got cattle roping, horse breaking, stagecoaches, bank robberies, you name it. All those classic activities you think of. Like in an old spaghetti western, you know?
I can see the fun in it, and I can hear about you testing it out with people and them having fun, so that's cool. You know, I see the shaky six-shooter edition, you know, I see that. I see the bags, I see the hand slapping, I see the spurs, so I kind of have like a vision in my mind of this game, even though I can't play it at this moment, but I get the point.
And if it's fun to you, hopefully that translates to it being fun to someone else, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a giant fan of the Old West. I've been playing, you know, role-playing games from back in the day. I used to play Boot Hill, and I always bought the Old West games, and I never felt like I had one that hit the mark, you know, that just did everything I wanted it to do, that was my go-to Western game. I had one or two that were real close. I was a big Way Out West fan for many years, but, you know, I just never felt like I got one that just captured it on all cylinders for me.
Uh-oh, I hear a story coming up. Okay, you are such an easy mark at times, dude. I love talking to you. Are you telling me on your crowdfunding word of honor that this game, Spurs, hits all of those cylinders that you may have been remiss with other games?
Here's the politician in me. For me personally, it hits all the marks.
For you personally, what?
It hits all my marks. It hits all the things I've ever wanted in an Old West game.
For anyone out there, go to Kickstarter.com and type in Spurs. That's S-P-U-R-S. And if you cannot find it there, if you are lost, if you do not have that last bullet, always go to DJGrandpa.com and draw from our bag, and we'll point you to Spurs. Mr. B, Sean, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Being good friends, we both chose the path of industrial design. As a reminder of our childhood, we've created a wooden horse. Simple and timeless.
Welcome to DJ Grandpa's crib, man. Good to know you. Now, how do I pronounce your name for sure? So
it's Netta, N-E-T-T-A, Netta.
Oh, beautiful craftsmanship on the horses, by the way.
Thank you very much. So the actual project is very simple, but very, very unique. It's a wooden horse. It's a very old, good piece of a wooden horse, redesigned, very chic, and it's really good for children to play and for adults to remember they were kids. And as a design object, it's a very, very unique wooden horse, which gallops like a real horse.
And it comes in a variety of very vivid colors.
I love the natural wood because really it's timeless and it is warm. And for the colors we can offer, five different combinations of two color horse, we call it. So we have the turquoise and baby blue, which is kind of a double bluish horse.
Right.
We have another one in green, which is bad apple green, which is very, look like a toxic and very bright green with a British racing green.
right,
on the base, which is taken from the car industry. It's an old colors of Aston Martin and Jaguar.
Oh, gotcha.
And then we have the pomegranate and the black one. It's a jet black, so it's really red. It's like a Ferrari and a black one. Right. We have the summer yellow and the brown one, which is very, very calm and a bright horse. And we also have the fusion and the black, which is very majestic. I think it's a very manly horse, but many people say that's very feminine because of the fusion. But I love it.
We left out. You have galloping horses. That's another thing that makes it unique and very special.
When the horse is basically running on its wheels, it looks like it's galloping in a really slow motion, like you would see the black stallion galloping in somewhere there in the fields, and then you would slow motion the movie and you just see it crossing all four legs on air and just one by one is stepping on it and repeatedly going on and on. And this is one of the success and one of the surprises of that piece, of course.
I know, it's mechanized. It's mechanized without batteries.
We didn't put any iron, any steel inside, no rods, no nothing, just plain wood. And we're using the natural strength of wood in different places, all the pins and all the dowels, just to make it as strong as it should be.
Okay. I'm saying that your toy, your mechanized wooden horse, if it holds up throughout time, you know, through time, if it holds up, you know, generally, I'm just saying it's a guaranteed antique. It's incredible the way you guys have put this together. And I see that you've even done this computer-aided design now, you know, which is not new, but it's still of this generation or whatever. And so that's super cool, too. Your video is very awesome. You got real horses in it.
This is one of the farms that we took the observations of the different types of horses and redesigned the first pieces again and again till we got the final shapes of the legs and the horseshoes and the tail and the neck and the ears and the everything, each part of the horse. We did so many lines until we got to purify the final shape of that toy.
Could I call this farm your R&D place, your research and development place?
Exactly. R&D lab. It's a natural R&D lab.
How many iterations of this horse do you think you've gone through?
We didn't went immediately to Kickstarter. So we used to manufacture those horses piece by piece. Every time we change it a little bit for people who actually order these horses. And every time we change it and the parts we like, we left it as it is. And the parts we thought that need to be changed, we redesigned them. So every time, it's an evolution of a few years, I guess, 3 or 4 years of building those horses until we got to the shape we are really happy with. And we can mass produce now.
All right. The last question is, these horses of yours, they look about the height of a, 4-year-old, a 5-year-old? About half the height of a 4 or 5-year-old toddler, kid, or whatever you'd call it. I'm thinking, I get one for my daughter who's 4. She's going to try and ride it, man. Why didn't you just make one that was big enough for them to ride?
It's a good question, and everyone are asking why we chose that size and didn't make a bigger one for children to ride on and didn't make a small one for adults to put on the shelf.
Right.
I'll tell you the truth. Making a bigger one on Kickstarter would be extremely hard because of the weight. So we wanted to do one size combined for a design item and also for a children play, which would not take over the room, could justify the price, because if we would make it smaller, it would cost almost the same because it's the same amount of work and it's the same amount of pieces. And if we make a bigger one, it would be extremely heavy. And then we can deliver it only in the United States, and it would cost...
The shipping would be a fortune.
Yeah. Regarding the weight, you know, shipping international is really, is usually relatively small amount to the price of the product. And unfortunately, we charge about $30 shipping international because the horse weighs almost 4 pounds, and shipping those 4 pounds is quite expensive. But we calculated it and we figured that it is still a worth amount of money at the price is still worthy, sending it international with the international fee of shipment, and have more buyers and let more people have this horse instead of keeping it inside the States.
For anyone out there on Kickstarter, check out this project. I believe it will be heirloom quality, and I believe it will be a guaranteed antique if all these standards hold up, which I kind of believe they will from talking to Netta. But go to Kickstarter.com and type in my wooden horse, and that's how I found it. And if you can't find it there, go to DJGrandpa.com, where I will have links for Netta and his family in Israel, who are gonna ship this project worldwide. And thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Angel gloss can be attached to literally anything. You can attach them to your front door. You can attach them to your car, your plant. If you've got property and you have cattle gates, you can put them on cattle gates to know if the gates are left open.
How's it going, Steve?
Hello, how are you?
It's okay. You're all about technology and mega blocks.
Mega blocks, angel blocks,
kinds of blocks. I said mega blocks because I got caught up in the whole Lego thing, how you snap blocks. And I was like, you know, one day Lego is going to come on Kickstarter and complain about all this connectivity, man.
Oh, Legos loves it. They love it that the adults like to play with Lego-like stuff because we buy it for our kids.
And I want to say thank you for being the first interview for me, DJ Grandpa, of 2014, man. I really appreciate that.
Oh, wow. That's an honor.
So you have Angel Blocks. You're on Kickstarter. You're out of Oklahoma. That always sounds like a big state to me, you know, like big things are going on in Oklahoma, you know.
Yeah, well, we're right in the middle of everything, so it's a good place to be, the crossroads of America.
What I really want you to do is tell me about Angel Blocks.
By day, the way I make my living is I'm an engineer, and I design automation technologies for all different kind of things, oil and gas wells, all this stuff. So, you know, I go to work every day, and I design this stuff, and then I come home, and my kids play with Legos, and I have all those same problems that every human being on the planet has. My dog gets in the trash. I've got dead plants because I forget to water them.
I look at that
and I think, okay, there's got to be a way to take all this wonderful technology and this incredible invention called the internet and solve these problems. The problem is that home automation solutions, which have been around forever, but they're getting really cool because of the internet and the Pebble watches and all of that stuff, they only really automate like the home. So take a light switch, for example, right?
Right.
A light switch already interacts with your house. You flip it on, the lights come on. You flip it off, the lights go off. All a home automation system does is it automates that. But it doesn't have any idea how to handle a plant or a trash can, your air conditioning unit. And when I'm talking about your air conditioning unit, I'm talking about that physical thing out back that has all the copper in it that's valuable to thieves. And so I started thinking what we really need is a very simple, easy-to-use system that can click together like Legos click together to build different combinations that can be used to solve life problems and not home problems. And so that's where Angel Blocks kind of comes from. You think of it like what you're doing is you're taking these blocks, you click them together to solve your little problems in your life, and they become your guardian angels. You have this little army of angels that sits at home and does this work for you. And I'll give you a perfect example. I've got one on my trash can.
Right.
And if my dog decides that he's going to stick his nose in that trash can, the minute he gets close to it, the tag is able to sense that, and it plays this little beep that sounds like the beep for his shock collar when he decides to get out of the fence. He doesn't like that sound, so he runs away. If he decides he's going to be persistent and knocks the trash over, I instantly get a text message on my phone so I can call my 17-year-old son and tell him to clean up the mess before his mom gets home and sees it. You see what I'm saying? That's different than being able to turn lights on and off with your cell phone, and that's kind of what Angel Blocks is about.
Well, while we're talking, my dog is barking downstairs, so he really doesn't like what you're saying. Because he gets into the trash all the time, he and his brother.
Yeah.
So we've tried everything, but I see what
I'll
you're saying.
I'll tell you what.
But hold up. But that's how you're saying it's a lifestyle device.
Yeah.
Not necessarily an automation device. It is an automation device, but you're saying it goes one step further. It's to help you monitor your lifestyle for those kind of like pet peeves like you would have if your pet were to knock over the trash can or something. And,
sure.
And you're saying you have another example.
And to be clear, we do all the home automation stuff. I've got right. motion detectors and all that stuff. But we had a problem in our house just the other day, and I was kicking myself because we didn't solve it with Angel Blocks ahead of time. But we had a toilet that malfunctioned and overflowed and caused about $3,000 worth of water damage. What's really sad is we have an Angel Block that has a little water presence sensor on it right. that we could have stuck down on the ground. And here's the cool thing you can do with Angel Blocks. You're not stuck to just getting things like phone messages. You can create complex interactions. So one of the things I could have done, because I would have wanted to be woken up
right
out of a dead sleep, I could have made my bedroom lights flash on and off to wake me up when something like that happens, to make sure I get up, right? So that's another example of where you might take lifestyle automation and do something with it that really you wouldn't be able to do with home automation. So it's this combination of being able to take these building blocks and click them together to get these different functions, like monitoring plant soil, right?
Right. But you're talking about that your system with the, you know, I guess its brain is this whole Angel Gate box, right?
Yep.
But you're saying that because of the different sensory applications that the Angel brain has in combination with the Angel Blocks, which are the sensors, you can use it to solve problems, everyday problems that might come up that you wouldn't have even thought of for home automation or something like that.
Well, you may have thought of them, but you wouldn't have been able to do it
because
you know, it just doesn't have that. So there's a couple of things about the Angel Gate that are kind of important. The Angel Blocks, their whole function in life is you attach them to something and it makes that something smart. It gives it a voice and it gives it senses.
Right.
And so now it can monitor the environment for conditions that might indicate an action needs to be taken.
Okay.
A plant soil monitor, for example, is going to look for moisture. And when it sees that there's no moisture in the plant, it tells the Angel Gate, hey, there's no moisture in the plant. The Angel Gate is the brain of the whole system, and it knows what you want to happen when there's no water in the plant. You can set up what are called automation rules. You can click them together with just your finger on a smartphone, right. And you can say when the plant soil is dry, send me a text message. If it's dry for 2 days and I don't go ahead and add water, post on my Facebook account that I'm being a slacker and I'm not watering my plant.
Right.
You can do all kinds of things. And the really cool thing is that even if you lose your internet, the Angel Gate will still make all the automation work. And that's something that a lot of these cloud-based home automation systems can't do. If they lose the internet, their whole system is down.
Oh, that's so what we you keep meant by that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And that's important because, you know, you got to think, if you're going to put your life in the hands of these little electronic guardian angels, you don't want some hacker to be able to hack a central cloud server and steal your account and be able to control your house from halfway around the world. So that's why we keep it local.
You said another important thing. You said cloud-based, so I was a little slow on catching that one, but you're saying with the gate and with the Angel Blocks, it's its own kind of environment, its own ecosystem. I mean, how is that taken care of? What sort of wireless technology are you using?
Well, the Angel Gate actually has, it's built on a Raspberry Pi computer, so it's got a very powerful brain, and it talks to the Angel Blocks using a brand new proprietary wireless technology. And this is what I do for a living, is I develop wireless automation. This LoRa technology, it's pronounced LoRa, and it's short for long range. It's a technology from a company called Simtek. They're based out of California in San Diego. And it is just an amazing technology. With the Angel Blocks, we're able to get 1,000 feet indoors and 2 miles outdoors while still being able to operate for 2 years off of a couple of AAA batteries.
I have a daughter and I call her Cactus because she has all these plants and she won't let anyone else touch them in the house. But, you know, if you're not careful, you'd go over and they're all dead. They're all dry. So if I could give her something like this and put it on her cell phone, her smartphone, she would at least have an ally.
Yeah. And you know, what lifestyle automation is all about is that we're home automation, you know, everybody's homes are pretty much the same. You've got lights and air conditioning and right. and these things that you want to automate. But lifestyle automation is completely different because while I may have an application that involves me wanting to know when my dog gets in the trash, for people that don't have dogs, they don't have that problem. But they may, you know, have really expensive racing bikes that they want to put right. an Angel tag on, and they may want notification whenever that leaves the garage and they're not on it.
Right.
That's kind of the point, is that everybody has got, you know, we're all born individual. We get put into groups. We're everyone unique, and we have different likes and different things that we like to do. And because of that, we have different annoyances that come up in our life that would just be nice to be able to get rid of if you can. And that's why Angel Blocks has been designed with this kind of plug and play, click together structure, so that if you don't need to monitor the trash can because dogs aren't going to get in it, fine. There's still plenty of things you can do with it because of all of the features. You know, one thing we haven't talked about yet is angel tagging. I don't know if you even have heard of that concept or not. The way angel tags work, they're real simple. It's a very simple little device. When it detects motion, it communicates with the angel gate and says, "I'm in motion." And the angel gate then begins to actively track it. When it can't hear it anymore, it says, "Okay, that tag is now out of range," and it creates an event. And you can tell the angel gate when this event happens, do something. For example, you could say the angel tag that I have in my wife's van, when it leaves the driveway and the angel gate can no longer hear it, that creates an event saying it's gone. I want you to shut the garage door. And if there's any dangerous appliances on in the house, like being an engineer, I have a soldering iron, right. turn those off because we don't want the house to burn down. You know, the classic example is the clothes iron. The other right. thing that you could do with it, and we want to be real careful to point out that we're not creating a child safety device, but another example, and it's one that I hadn't really thought of, but you just gave me the idea. If you have a toddler, you know, tag one of these things onto their body and you can get notification if they pop out of the house when they're not supposed to. Because I don't know how your kids were, but when mine were toddlers, they were escape artists. And, right. you know, we actually almost lost one because he got out of the house and got underneath the car that was moving. And, yes, you know, the car almost ran him over. So if we would have had a tag on him that was set to a very short range that would have notified us when he was out of the house, you know, that would have been a very – it's not going to guarantee his safety, but it would be – it's better to have some kind of input, yeah. you know, that he's doing that. So, yeah, that's – now, what they won't do, just to be clear, is if you stick it in your child's lunchbox or their backpack and they get abducted on their way to school, it doesn't actually provide any tracking capability because that's a whole different kind of technology. They basically – the whole point of an angel tag is to determine whether it's present or not present in the Angel Block system.
Well, Steve, man, dude, this has been totally cool. You got the marketing on point also, Angel Blocks. How could you go wrong with that? Lifestyle automation anyone can use, and it's on Kickstarter. And he has time left, and he's funding, and he's, you know, he's really wants you to check it out and see if you'd like it. I like it. I think it's totally cool. But if there's anyone out there and you have a hard time trying to find it on Kickstarter, always go to djgrandpa.com and you'll find links with Steve and his project, Angel Blocks, there. Steve, I want to say thank you very much for dumbing it down for me because I really needed that, man. I really needed it to be explained to me. Thank you very much for your patience.
Hey, it was no problem. Thank you.
We'd like to give a shout out to a former Crib guest, Evan Romaine, for her work on Macklemore's Grammy Award winning rap album, The Heist. Crowdfunding is about community. This week, I'd like to take a moment to thank a community member who goes out of his way to help indie artists achieve their crowdfunding dreams. Patrick J. Russell is an amazing supporter and promoter of all things crowdfunding. Check him out on Twitter at Pat Russell Books. I'd like to thank all our guests. I'd also like to thank our listeners. Each week, we couldn't do it without you guys. A special thanks goes out to Trevor Williams and to my mentor, The Mumbler, for providing music to DJ Grandpa's Crib. Thanks to Jeffrey Banks, Bertram Zeke, and Zach Samile
our assistant editors. Until next week, so say we all.
The homepage for DJ Grandpa's Crib is djgrandpa.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, DJ Grandpa's Crib, all one word. Please subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, which helps other people discover the show. And don't forget to leave a comment while you're there. Our producer is Von Rupert. The executive producer of this and all Bedrock Communications podcasts is AF Rufus. We'll be right back.